Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 10th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well. Good to have you along, as always, my friend. So this is a bit wonky topic, but it's an important one, and it has significant consequence, I think. Let me see, how do you even set this up? During the last campaign, our erstwhile pardoning president spent a lot of time extolling the virtues of coal and coal miners, almost with like a little kid admiration. I mean, he thought coal should come back. He talked about beautiful coal, big beautiful coal, et cetera, et cetera. Once he got elected, not a lot changed. The American coal industry, which feeds coal primarily to electric power plants to generate electricity using that coal, that industry is slowly, or perhaps not so slowly, dying. As the price of wind turbines and solar panels continues to drop, and as natural gas continues to be produced, the attractiveness of coal as a energy source keeps going down, and they keep closing, the industry keeps closing coal plants. Mm-hmm. Well, gee, that's too bad, but Donald Trump made a promise that he was going to save the coal industry. And so recently, the administration has floated an idea. And I guess I have to preface this by saying it really is floating an idea. There was a report that somehow mysteriously was leaked from the federal government. I can't imagine that anyone there would leak anything, but there was a leak of a proposal. And in that proposal, the federal government would claim that there is a national security crisis at hand, that the electric grid might collapse, and it might basically be destroyed because there are not enough power plants that have a 90-day supply of energy on site. That is to say, they don't have a 90-day supply of coal in the backyard to keep that plant running. And that because of the extreme risk of that that eventuality, that all of a sudden we wouldn't have any coal plants and the lights would go out and we would all be in a national security crisis, the administration is proposing that the Department of Energy use a couple 70-year-old laws that were passed just after World War II to force utilities to purchase electric power from coal plants in order to keep those coal plants alive. Okay, I'll stop there. Tell me, D.R., what do you have any idea what might be wrong with that kind of a proposal? Have you seen anything about it? What's your take on this, this thing?
Not only is it legally questionable, it violates the purported beliefs of this administration. This administration claims to be a free market administration that doesn't believe in government picking winners and losers, yet they want to pick winners and losers. This is an administration that purports to be against abuse of welfare, but what they're proposing is effect is welfare for the coal and nuclear industry, a handout to the coal and the nuclear industry. And they've received a pushback from not only from climate hawks but also from the natural gas industry and
from all the utilities. I think the utilities don't want to be forced to buy power from it's a fixed price.
I mean, and this is when the government takes over the means of production. Isn't that known as socialism? I thought these guys were against socialism.
I think there's a guy named Stalin. He used to wear a big, heavy coat, and he had kind of this big mustache. And he was a Stalinist central planner, deciding how much electricity you had and how much you should pay for it. Was just really, it really riled up some of the conservative parts of our country, right?
Exactly. And now that's all gone out the window, basically.
Well, so from what I've read, and this is still in the proposal stage, right? So what I've read is that it probably can't actually come into fruition until sometime in the fall. What I see is that there's a 2-year lifetime on it. And the article that I read said it may end up that they simply force utilities near military bases to buy electricity from coal plants. But that what I saw is that there's going to be lots and lots of legal pushback to this idea, because you're right, it completely destroys a free market, right? It just stomps all over the free market. But evidently, under this, one of the two laws, the Defense Production Act, I mean, the DOE has a lot of authority to do this. It's going to be hard to stop them if they want to push this through. And that because the courts will give deference to the federal government, to the executive branch for national security reasons, the courts probably would not stop this in advance. Right, they would let it go into effect, and then we'd spend, you know, time trying to reverse it. But it would go into effect, and it.
Although it does raise the question of if this ultimately got to the U.S. Supreme Court, would they rule the Defense Production Act and the Federal Power Act, the 1920 law that Trump is also supposed citing to back this policy? Would they rule both of those acts unconstitutional? Because, you know, again, you do have to wonder. For the real ideologues, if they say it is okay for the government to essentially force private industry to have a preference for coal and nuclear, what's to stop a future government from trying to force private industry to have a preference for clean energy? And presumably people like Gorsuch would not be in favor of that, right?
Oh, well, what if the government decided that they would force you to eat peanut butter sandwiches and you had to eat this peanut butter sold to you at the federally regulated price?
There was a time when people in Trump's party would call this tyranny, wouldn't they?
And yes, if someone else, maybe a guy who's a president whose last name began with O, that person had even hinted at such a proposal, the heads there would be blood all over the ceiling of the U.S. Senate as these guys' heads exploded. But now it's all okay.
Yep.
Well, I guess the other interesting thing. So keep in mind, as outrageous and outlandish as this proposal is, so was withdrawing from the Paris Accord and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it isn't real yet, right? It's got to go through some legal hurdles. And a curious white knight is riding around out there in all this. And the white knight could be FERC. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that we have roundly condemned on this program multiple times, they rejected a similar proposal that was floated last January. So for five of the guys just said, no, that's stupid. Don't come back. But they are kind of one line of defense to reject this whole thing, because if you're mandating that utilities buy electricity from certain producers, then FERC has to be involved. And if they don't like it, it's a problem, right?
Exactly.
I don't know. It is truly through the looking glass time, and calls for everyone to go out and vote. Right, DR? I mean, the insanity of this is, I don't know. Unless people speak out and call it for what it is, which is a terrible idea, anti-American idea. I mean, these guys that are allied with the president, I mean, they just keep doing stuff until somebody stops them, right? It's kind of like they're bullies.
This is what I'd call the mean power plan.
That's right. Another thing is just the mean. Right, and they're going to do stuff until you stand up and poke them in the eye, just like in the schoolyard from many, many years ago. So there you go. You heard it here first. The president is against the free economy. He wants to have you pay more money for electricity based on a dirty fuel, because I guess that's the other thing we didn't touch on. The whole thing here, the two primary beneficiaries of this whole scheme would be Peabody Coal and Murray Energy, right? These are politically well-connected people who are going to benefit from what Trump wants to do. And he's going to finish his campaign promises by doing it. So I just caught myself there. I was listening to a podcast today thinking how I need to be much not cooler, what's the word, just calmer in my presentation. I shouldn't get worked up. I hope that I'm not someone at the other end of this podcast doesn't have their hands over their ears saying, oh, my God.
Well, in this case, the outrage is more than justified.
I don't know. So I think it is, but boy. So there's that. Speaking of outrage, the other big outrage of the week has to do with Swampy Scott Pruitt, who has continued to be kind of this zombie, not even a zombie. He's kind of like the knight in Search for the Holy Grail, where you keep chopping off arms and he keeps saying,
exactly,
just a flesh. He's still there. He's doing all this crazy stuff, and he is still administrator of the EPA. The latest turn of the screw has something to do with, of course, Rachel Maddow covers it much better than I do, but basically the idea that it's illegal for a federal government employee to use his office to get benefits for somebody he knows, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll let you tell the story. What is the latest unbelievable turn?
It was revealed that Pruitt's scheduler, a person by the name of Milan Hupp, was basically pressured by Pruitt to, among other things, try to find a used mattress that Pruitt could purchase from the Trump International Hotel. I believe that Hupp was also the person involved in connecting with the head of the Chick-fil-A fast food restaurant chain, because apparently Pruitt's wife was interested in trying to operate a Chick-fil-A franchise. That scheduler has announced their resignation, and as well as the top legal counsel to Pruitt, Sarah Greenwalt. And
oh, really?
This Pruitt now has to be considered not just the most corrupt individual in the Trump administration. He may be one of the most corrupt individuals ever to serve in U.S. government in American history. We at least in the top five at this point.
It is truly remarkable the staying power that he has, and that staying power can only come from support of people who. You have to imagine, I mean, that people in the fossil fuel industry like him just fine, right? Mm-hmm. And he could be doing almost anything. He could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and they would still mm-hmm. like him, right? Mm-hmm. And so the idea that he would have his secretary call up the president of Chick-fil-A to get his wife a franchise mm-hmm. and think he can get away with it is... Mm-hmm. Anyway... I'm going to try and stay calm and not have my voice get all whiny and sour. I mean, it's remarkably embarrassing, and you mm-hmm. wonder when Trump is going to get mad about it.
Is he stealing supplies off the desks? It's like this sort of penny anti-corruption. Just this. We think about politicians in Massachusetts who are engaged in low-level corruption. I mean, this guy is.
I think that it is both low-level corruption, and we've made this point before. The low-level corruption is, as you say, this penny ante stuff where he's got the Bostitch stapler in his desk drawer that he's trying to sneak out of the building. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At the same time, he is completely devastating the environmental rules of the country for the benefit of a few people. And I think the same psychology has to be at work in the Chick-fil-A case and in the mm-hmm. mercury, whatever the poisonous mercury stuff that they mm-hmm. allowed. It's all of a piece.
Again, one of the most sociopathic individuals ever to serve the United States government. Ever.
Ever. Well, I think that maybe... Yeah, I don't know where you go with all that. I think that let's hope that I'm kind of tired of talking about Scott Pruitt because this unfolding scandal keeps happening. But I think mm-hmm. it's important to point out the scoundrelly. Is scoundrelly a word? Scoundrelly? I don't think so. I don't think you can be an adverbial scoundrel. Anyway, mm-hmm. he's a bad guy. We got to keep pointing it out until somebody at the White House finally gets embarrassed to have him hanging around. Anyway, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let's put it down there. What we'll do is put some links to what we talked about in the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. And we'll put the whole blog, we'll link it up on the Facebook page at /massclimateaction so you can easily find it and listen to the show and rate us and all that kind of good stuff. If you don't want to go to the Facebook page, you can go to your smartphone and click on any of those various podcast distribution apps like Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, things like that. We're there. When you're there, rate us so that pushes us up in the ratings. So, D.R., we're going to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration, in particular of people like Swampy Scott Pruitt, that they not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, D.R., thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.